This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Welcome to this workshop on recognizing depression, dealing with depression. I would like to make this a workshop. I realize when we're talking about human problems like depression, none of us would want to come to a workshop like this and open our lives and talk about it. So I don't intend to try to make you say things that you're not comfortable saying. At the same time, I also realize that there's something that can be incredibly powerful when we are honest with each other. And so I would just encourage us here as we look at this and as hopefully we do some interacting that you don't feel pressured to say anything that you're not comfortable saying. And at the same time, you realize that it's safe to say things that are true that may be helpful to other people. And depression is something that it's just far easier for us to think about helping somebody else than to recognize that we may be struggling with something like this and can just feel embarrassing. And I think particularly for God's people, it is tough for us to experience something like this or any other emotional struggle, anxiety. It's tough for us to face something like this without feeling spiritually defeated. And the truth is, sometimes we are contributing to a problem by maybe bad habits or whatever, but there are also other reasons. And I am grateful. It does seem like in the last number of years have been more a bit more openness, so people are able to talk. And in some ways, it's just been so powerful when people are willing to share their stories. I thought about starting with some statistics, and statistics are always, it can be a bit, what would I say, we're always interested in them unless we're one of them, and then they get to be rather difficult. And I know my daughter, one daughter who struggled with, who was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, came to just detest statistics because she was one and she didn't know where she fit in that. So I'm not intending to share a lot of statistics, but I will say this: it's a growing problem. Some actually talk about it almost as an epidemic in the United States, particularly in the last about 30 years. Depression has increased about 400%, diagnosed about 400%, and that's just huge. And we don't know for sure, people don't know for sure what all is that increase. I think as Christians, we would recognize that when people violate God's ways, there are emotional consequences. And so as a culture becomes more sinful, we would expect that there would be more emotional consequences for that. But what about God's children? Are we also part of that? Or what about when we experience these kinds of things? I'm going to ask a number of questions here at the beginning, and I did not write down answers to these questions. So I'd like to hear from you. And if you feel a bit timid in because you have personally experienced depression, we're going to assume that some of these opening questions, you're talking about somebody else, somebody that you have observed. So what are the symptoms of depression? Just name some.
Loss of motivation.
Loss of motivation.
Lack of energy.
Silence.
Hopelessness, yes.
Sad.
Discouraged feelings. Okay. Sounds like you're naming, kind of write down the list on the books that I read on it. But I'm assuming that you're not just thinking about books, you're thinking about experience and maybe people that you've interacted with, that you have loved. Where there is hopelessness, where there are people who were energetic and suddenly they're lethargic, there's something about seeing that that's just tremendously sad as an observer. And you can't just make them suddenly have energy. And saying things to them sometimes almost can have the opposite effect. You tell them to cheer up and they feel worse because they can't do it. Another question I'd like to ask you now, this is a little more personal, and I'm not asking you to answer out loud. It's on your sheet, and what I'd like to do is just read down through this, and I'm encouraging you to note the ones, if you're sitting too close to somebody, you don't want to actually put checks on yours, okay? Note the ones that you particularly struggle with, okay? What gets you down? And I'm not necessarily thinking even about full-blown major depression necessarily, but what tends to wear on you or get you down? A task seems too difficult? A relationship problem has no end in sight? Life is too complicated? You have a pileup of trials or difficulties? You feel lonely? No close friends? And no one seems to understand you? 7, you experience defeat repeatedly. God seems distant. Goals you had set all fall apart, and it looks like there's no way to achieve them. You see no purpose for living. Now, it's interesting, I made this list, I don't know when I made this, I'd done teaching on this, and I decided ahead of this workshop, I'm going to go down through this and fill it out. I mean, if the teacher ought to do it too, right? And I went down through there, and you know, I couldn't really find anything that was major for me, and I realized I had not put on what really makes me feel kind of down. So this is not an exhaustive list. I just kind of made a list of things that I've heard people say. The one that probably gets closest for me would be 3. Complications can really be tough for me. When life just gets, when you're working hard and then suddenly you get this thrown at you and then another thing and suddenly there's so many things to try to work out. That has been a struggle for me sometimes. But it still didn't get to the one that really, actually I wrote 2 more down that tend to get to me. So I'm going to ask you, anything additional that you'd like to add here? What gets you down?
I get confused in my walk with the Lord.
Confused, okay, in your walk with the Lord. Don't know for sure what God is doing
or where
you're headed, okay? Mm-hmm.
Conflict.
Conflict.
Fellow believers.
Okay, conflict with fellow believers.
Too much change.
Too much change, good. Good to hear that from a lady. Sorry, my wife says change is harder for her than it is for me. One that I wrote down, what can get me down is when it seems like my best efforts, I know they can't do anything to change it. I could do anything I want. My best efforts, just it's not doing anything. I've tried and tried. And it's just, there's just no way to change it. There's one more that will tend to get me down. This is not so much probably on the depression side, but I can't function long when I'm behind. Now that's maybe more of a personality thing, but if some people, they're always behind and they're just kind of, that's just the way they are and they're good with it. You know, I have to get caught up So I'll typically do whatever it takes to kind of get caught up again, and then I'm all right. I feel just much better. But if I keep going and it just keeps piling up, that'll get me. Anything else that you'd like to say?
You might have sort of touched on it, but when you have tried to resolve a conflict problem, but after many, many attempts, it seems every time it gets worse that when you try the
first time, okay. Improve. Okay.
So it's like shooting yourself in the foot.
Right.
So you quit trying.
Resolving your efforts to actually resolve something almost make it worse.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So here's something for you to reflect on. You're welcome to comment here, but how do you think when you get down? What are your thought processes? Anyone? Yes.
Irrational. Because suddenly you think that I mean, you know intellectually that if God is for you, who can be against uh-huh. you? You know he loves you. You know he's your child. Yet your thinking tends to go exactly the reverse of that.
Okay.
That nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. There is no help.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that. Out of this
mm-hmm.
problem, so it's basically not rational.
Okay, it's irrational. But you actually named a number of things that we think oftentimes, that it's hopeless or that there's no way out or God even doesn't care about this and so on. Those are our thoughts often that we have when we are down. Anyone else? Yes.
If I would have done something right, I wouldn't be here.
If I would have just done something right, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. Another question, how do you act? Just while you're thinking on that, it's been helpful for me to explore the role of feelings. What is the function of feelings? And I've concluded, as I listen to people, feelings are... One of the functions of feelings is to make life seem real for us. If we experience something deeply, deeply distressing and we can't feel it, it's hard to even think it's real. Or something tremendously happy and we just don't feel it. We struggle with that. In our relationship with God, sometimes we can't feel it and then we have trouble believing. Is God really real? You understand? So that's one of the functions of feelings. It helps us actually to believe life. We get in trouble then when we have powerful feelings that go against reality. Sometimes our thought processes are actually driven by our feelings. It feels like nobody cares, so that's the reality that we live by. We kind of go by that reality. And we act upon then another function of feelings is that it tends to motivates our responses to life. Feelings motivate. So if I get happy, it motivates me physically. If I get, and let's just back up, you know, sometimes you are so excited, you have trouble holding still, okay? Because your feelings just want to, well, the reverse kind of thing happens for people who are depressed. Just as it is extremely difficult to hold in your feelings when you are excited or angry, it is extremely difficult to be motivated when you have no feeling to be motivated. It's actually just as powerful a drag the opposite direction. So it helps us to understand if you've not been depressed, sometimes you look at a person, well, just get going. I mean, it'd be the easiest thing to just get up and go, and we don't realize that's a tremendously difficult emotional barrier. How else do you act? Any other comments on that?
Like you were saying, sometimes you simply don't.
Okay, just don't act.
Make life hard for those around you.
Make life hard for those around you.
Sometimes withdraw from people.
Withdraw, yes.
A little bit more to think. Mine is, I went through depression, mm-hmm. discouraged, mm-hmm. and have in the past fear that I would have to go back into depression.
Yeah, afraid of going back into that darkness, into that. Yeah. One of the, I think for me now, and I just insert here, be open with you. I don't think I've ever been depressed. I've related to a lot of people who've struggled with depression. I say I don't think, okay? You should ask my wife, I guess. I wonder what she would say. We've gone through some really tough things where it could almost, but I don't think I have, but my temptation when I am just down, I would say I get discouraged sometimes, but it's typically a temporary thing. My temptation at those times is to escape. I just want to block out everything, and I'll maybe read something that takes me away from reality. I don't want to face life. So that would be my temptation, I think. I will just give you here diagnostic symptoms, this does come from the DSM-4. There's a DSM-5 out now, and I think that basically the same on this one. But I just kind of quickly go through this. You actually named most of these. A depressed mood. These are sometimes worded just a little bit differently depending on the source you might find, but often it'll be described as a sadness, okay, or a depressed mood. A second symptom is a loss of pleasure or interest in activities that once you enjoyed. Okay, so there's been a shift from something you enjoyed to where you don't have pleasure in it or don't have interest in it. A third diagnostic symptom is a large change in either weight or appetite, and it may go either way. Sometimes people gain weight, sometimes they lose weight. It can go either way, but where there's significant change. A fourth symptom is insomnia, that's a difficulty sleeping, or hypersomnia, which is oversleeping, sleeping more than normal. Just talking to a girl recently here who said she is right now sleeping about 12 hours a day, and even then doesn't feel like getting up. Decreased activity. And again, sometimes this can go the opposite direction where there is more agitation, but a decrease in activity. Sixth one is intense fatigue. And I know that this is sometimes described differently. I was thinking when I wrote this down, intense fatigue doesn't quite, that's almost an oxymoron, but loss of energy, maybe just be a better way of saying just no energy. But it almost is worse than more energy. There's a tiredness, I think, that often goes with this. Seven, feelings of, and I think this might be reversed on your paper, but feelings of worthlessness or guilt. And I find that among Christians, I think particularly it seems like guilt is often in there. Now, they often will describe a feeling of worthlessness, but many times Christians are struggling with guilt who are dealing with depression. And when I say guilt, it's not so much, it's not always guilt for major sins in the past as much as I shouldn't be like this, okay? And regularly assuming responsibility for feelings and so on. Eighth symptom, difficulty concentrating or making decisions. And a ninth one is thoughts of death or suicide. Preoccupation kind of with darkness about life and sometimes wanting to die. Sometimes working with Christians, it is not so much that they are actually strongly tempted to take their life, but they want to die. They just wish they could. Now, in professional psychology, in diagnosing these, there have to be at least five of these symptoms present for at least 2 weeks, and it has to, of those five, one of them at least has to be one of these first two. So that's kind of the way in which it would be determined. Is this just a downtime, or is this a major depressive episode? Yes, over 2 weeks, sustained over 2 weeks, more than 2 weeks, five of these, and it needs to include at least one of the first two. Now, the workshop here is on recognizing and dealing with And I would like to, I'd like to look at why do people sometimes not realize, not recognize, just for my time here, when are we, when am I to be done?
2:05.
Okay.
I mean, 3:05.
Thank you. Why do people sometimes not realize they're depressed? I put here sometimes, and I realized later I should have put oftentimes. Often it comes on gradually. It is not real normal for a person to all at once be depressed, although there can be physiological reasons for a person really making a fairly significant shift. Many times people experience depression. It comes on gradually, and they sometimes don't even realize until later, looking back, they realize that they were depressed, but it often comes on gradually. This is another one that makes it confusing. Sometimes it has unexpected symptoms. It is sometimes, there are sometimes other things going on in our lives that we don't recognize it as depression. Somebody mentioned fear. Maybe it was fear of going back, but many times people who struggle with depression also struggle with anxiety. And any emotional condition sustained over a long time takes a lot of energy. And if you sustain that over an extended period of time, it can become an energy drain, and to the point of actually you experience depression, but you're experiencing something else, and that something else might be more in focus than the depression, and the depression more of a resultant thing. So that's an emotional one, but also sometimes physically. There are times when people have physiological, they have a sickness, they have an illness or something else that is taking a lot of energy, and the depression is more resultant because of the energy drain. And so what is focused on is more the physical issue, and they're struggling with a health issue or sometimes a situational issue, but I'm thinking of more kinds of things that we would say, this is what is wrong with me. And more commonly, people sometimes talk about a health issue and then not realize that actually there is such a drain on them that they also are experiencing depression. And the next one, I'm going to ask you to, how would you complete this? I think sometimes people would not recognize depression because they have been taught to be
strong.
What?
Tough.
Happy.
Happy, yes.
Not to share feelings.
Not to share feelings, to be stoic or, okay?
Quiet.
Good answers. There's one more I would say. Sometimes we have been taught, I think, to be responsible. And so we are actually framing the situations in life with a sense of responsibility in a way that we're not recognizing, we're not tuned to what we are feeling. And sometimes depression seems logically tied to events. So just as we sometimes may talk about a physical condition, sometimes the events in our lives are so in the forefront that that's what we talk about and that's what we think about and don't realize. We're not recognizing the symptoms of depression. And so I will insert here something even about diagnosis. It is typically professionals would be trained not to diagnose somebody who has lost a loved one in their immediate family, not diagnose them with depression until about at least 6 months following. So you understand, because they may be experiencing sadness, they may be experiencing many of those things, but it may not be a permanent situation of depression, and that with proper kinds of connection and so on, that they will work through their grief. But events, and I'm thinking of events like losses and so on, there are times when it's so much in focus that we were actually not paying attention to what is happening to us emotionally. Any other comments that you would have here about why we sometimes miss? Yes?
Can't long-term stress be actually a cause of depression?
Exactly. Certainly can. And I was going to talk about that a bit later. You're just ahead of me here. But that's true. If we talk about causes, stress is typically involved in some way or other. Were you waving? No, okay. Anyone else? I would like to think about dealing with depression now. And so how do we work with this, either in our lives personally or those around us? And I'd like to think about kind of three categories that we need to think about. And here we are coming a bit to causes now, just in understanding depression. And so I'm going to look at the three and then just talk about them. We need to think about physiology, about our bodies, and recognize that sometimes in depression we are dealing with physiological issues. Hormonal changes can be involved here. Typically, ladies experience more hormonal changes than men do. Not saying that men don't at all, just saying that that's probably one of the reasons that ladies are diagnosed with depression more commonly than men are. Maybe it's also because men are more stoic or more stubborn or not in tune with their feelings. Another physiological issue would be thyroid. Low thyroid can be a physiological cause. And I would say also that this is physiological, anything that involves significant energy depletion. And so there are times when people actually work themselves into depression. There are times when they are so stressed with work, with things that just seem like they have to do. I remember a man who had invested in a hog business, and it had seemed like a good investment. He had done work with hogs for some time and decided to go into it more. And about the time that he invested a significant amount, the hog market went down. And I watched that man work and work and work to try to save his investment, just to try to survive financially. That amount of work. We're going to be looking at Elijah as a biblical example in a little bit, and you'll find that after Elijah's experience on Mount Carmel with all that, I don't know what it would have been like for you, but that would have been a draining experience for me, okay? And then he runs a long time, and then he gets a death threat, and all of that physical drain, I think, was significant in Elijah's. That's just the drain, physiological drain, energy drain. Sometimes a major illness can, again, because of, may not be that the illness itself is causing it as much as its depletion of energy there. There could be others as well. With heart issues, this is the one that means a lot to us as Christians. So sometimes when people get angry and bitter and they hold that bitterness in their heart for time, it takes a lot of energy to be mad at people, okay? And when you're angry over a long time, sometimes people who are angry are depressed. And often, I should say sometimes, typically when it goes to depression for whatever reason, there's typically a certain amount of anger in there. And I will tell you that the thinking that goes with depression is typically goes in a cycle. It's cyclical. It gets in a rut. And if you could summarize the thinking of depression in one word, most of the time you could summarize it with that word, unfair. Okay. And if we live there too long, it actually can turn into an unhealthy spiritual condition of things are unfair. And I actually turned bitter as a result of that. So sometimes it's poor thinking, poor choices, poor lifestyles. Circumstances, then, I'm thinking of things like loss. There can be reverses, financial reverses. There can be loss of material things, loss of relationships, breakup of relationships, conflict in relationships, hardships that we go through in life, We work and work at something, and it only seems to go worse. Sometimes what we have people in ministry who have put their lives into, 30 years into something, and what they put into was growing for a time, and by the end of 30 years, it's falling apart and nobody's carrying it on. And people like that oftentimes struggle with this doesn't seem fair, it doesn't seem right, and so on, but it's a tremendous loss. Just mention here, I think this is on your sheet here, I don't think I have, oh yes I do, at the bottom here. Rarely is depression the result of only one of these. Typically there's a combination. Okay. However, often there is a primary cause. The probably in my interaction with people who have struggled with depression, one of the things that I really grieve over, particularly in the Christian community, is when we assume that when we learn a cause, it's the cause, and we stop there. The truth is, folks, that people, even if the primary cause is physiological, they need heart care. Their souls need care. They're struggling with thinking. Even if the causes are physiological, they're still struggling. And so we must not assume that if they can get medication for their thyroid or whatever, that everything's going to be okay. If they can somehow get, if it's physiological, they take another form of medication, whatever, that somehow everything is okay here, they still need soul care. Even when there is a primary cause that is different from what we might assume. And then as Christians, we need to consider all these factors and respond accordingly. So often it's a cluster. There's often a primary one. And so a couple of questions I'd like to just open up here. Maybe you have some comments on. Which do you think of these is the most common? And I'm not suggesting there is a right answer here as much as just wanting to hear from you. What do you hear is common? Pardon?
Undealt with
heart issues. Okay.
I think about that. But there are many people who don't deal with their heart issues but don't seem to
have. Okay. So you can have people who are not dealing with heart issues. Well, why are they not depressed? Sometimes you have bitter people who don't get depressed, for example. Yeah. Or, okay. And we don't necessarily have to focus a lot on primary cause. I will say this. I don't really know which is most common in terms of root cause or primary cause. There have been estimates, and I've heard this expressed from both Christians and secular sources, and there's some variation, but that physiology accounts for about, some have said 25%, about a fourth to a third of depression cases being the root cause. And I don't know, again, part of this is difficult to determine because even with physiology, we don't always know what is going on. We know some things, but we don't know all things. And so that's a tough one to determine. What I would say in my interaction with people is that the most common thing that triggers or that is in people's minds often when they talk about their depression is circumstances. Okay, so even if a primary cause is physiological, they will often talk about, and why is that? Well, we live in a broken world, folks, and all you have to do is look around and you'll find some reason to be depressed, right, in your circumstances. So it's a logical connection point. Why am I feeling this way? Well, look at this. So it's easy for us to look at our circumstances, and essentially that's what we talk about. Doesn't always mean that that's a primary cause. In fact, for some people, this is what is confusing. They actually think it's their circumstances. They work and work to try to fix their circumstances, and they actually do have a physiological problem. Sometimes these feelings are very, very confusing. And I don't understand this, why it is, but sometimes people can have, I've probably run into this most with ladies, but people can have hormonal changes and they have a specific anxiety or focus of depression or way, something that they're struggling with in their thinking that is, you almost can't get them away from thinking that. That's what they're thinking, but it is actually, when you actually find out what it is, it's hormonal. I can't tell you stories here, I would, just to illustrate it, but I'm just saying that typically we think of circumstances as, and sometimes the thought patterns can be very, very confusing. I should maybe tell you this because as Christians, we really care about the heart. When I say heart, I'm talking about the metaphorical heart, okay, the spiritual condition. One lady that called me one time was struggling with, she was struggling actually with an anxiety, with a circular thinking that just she would think blasphemous thoughts against God. Just racing through her mind, and she felt horrible about this. It was like she just, why am I? She prayed, she confessed, she tried everything to try to get rid of these things. So anyway, I have to compress this. In talking with her, I asked her one of the things after hearing her out and so on. I said, "Well, are you pregnant, or did you have a baby recently?" And she said, "Well, yes, I have a baby that's, I forget what it was, a month old or 2 months old, somewhere in there, something." And I said, "When did this start?" And it had just kind of come on her. It was not something that was gradual. It's not something that she had dealt with before. So I was able to assure her she's dealing with a hormonal issue. This is not, she does not have a blasphemous heart. She was horrified at the thoughts. It was not what was in her heart coming out. It was something was triggering emotion that was focusing. And I think with anxiety, we tend to focus on the thing we fear the most. So as Christians, we think, well, you know, thoughts against God, that's the worst thing, and that's where our thoughts go. With anxiety, many times we move, actually gravitate toward the very thing we fear. But anyway, she was dealing with that as a hormonal issue. We could look at what circumstances do ministry personnel face, could feed depression. Just any comments there? Some of you work in ministries, yes.
I'm not going into too much detail on my personal stuff. When people are bitter in the church.
Okay, when people in the church are bitter.
And
can feed.
Saying things about the
person. Okay. Saying things about others, saying things about the pastor that are not true, gossip going on. Okay. What else? Anyone comment? What circumstances in ministry?
When you don't see immediate fruit.
Some kinds of ministry, the fruit is really, really, there's not a lot of visible fruit. Mission organizations come together like this, you know, and some people working in some parts of the world, there's such an openness, and they can give these testimonies. And you're working in a place where there is hardness of heart. My heart goes out to anybody in Eastern Europe or Europe. I've traveled in different places, and Europe is a tough place to minister with the gospel of Jesus. At least there seems to be a kind of a hardness there. I salute people who are working in those areas. Yes.
Yes. About spiritual.
Yes.
From within, hard to control. What about spiritual from without?
Yes.
Hard to distinguish. Like, for example, you mentioned ministry. There's been more than once my wife and I have been able to identify unexplainable, you know, thoughts, things, expression that come, and realize, well, we just had a break from ministry.
Part of what makes it difficult to discern spiritual, you call it oppression or attack or whatever, is that it's not visible, and so you don't know, and you don't want to be hyper, and you don't want, it seems sometimes talking about those things almost tends to feed it. Okay, neither do you want to ignore it. And so that can catch us sometimes in ministry. But the reality is we believe that there is an enemy of our soul. I just want to say this to you, if you're dealing with those things, Christians do not need to live in fear of evil spirits. Our Lord is greater. and we should not live in fear. Sometimes we need to address those things. Okay, let's turn to Elijah. I'd like to take us to 1 Kings and just think about Elijah's ministry, his experience. 1 Kings 19. Just want to say about Elijah, I mentioned this already. Chapter 18 records the time when he was on at the top of Mount Carmel, had this tremendous victory. God answered by fire. The prophets of Baal were destroyed, and then there's this time when Elijah runs, and we don't, as clearly as I can tell, I mean, you wonder sometimes here, 17 miles is what it sounds like from my calculations, and how did he do it? I don't know. But he got there. Jezebel says, chapter 19, she sends a messenger, verse 2, to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. When he saw that, he arose and ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. I forget the calculation of the miles there, but he travels about 75 miles, if I have it right, from where he was in Jezreel down to Beersheba. Then he goes a day's journey into the wilderness, yet additional, and came and sat down under a broom tree. He prayed that he might die. He said, it is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's. I did not try to calculate if Elijah had five symptoms for 2 weeks or not. I'm just saying this guy is down, okay? I don't know if he's, who would diagnose him with what here. But I'd like to think with you about the way God responded to Elijah. It's so encouraging to see God's work with him. And I'm going to just, for the sake of time, I'm going to talk here. But if you've got a comment, if you have something to add here, feel free to inject either a comment or a question. God ministered to his most pressing needs first. That's the challenge to me. Here is Elijah, and he's under this tree, and he wants to die. And as he slept, verse 5, suddenly an angel touched him and said, arise and eat. He looked, and there by his head was a cake baked of coals and a jar of water, and he ate and he drank and he lay down again. So he gets food and drink delivered. I mean, it's bedside service here. And he lays down and sleeps again. And angel came back a second time. We don't know how long later, but he slept. Comes back a second time. There was a, it doesn't say what was there. It just says, arise and eat again. The journey is too great for you. So he rose and ate. So God ministered to his most pressing needs. When people are depressed, it's good for us to look at their circumstances. What can we do to alleviate? It's a right first response. These are not all listed in order, exact order. I'm not saying these are steps to dealing with it, just saying these are things we learn from God. But this is a really crucial one at the beginning. Second thing I note about God here is that God asks questions. Now, initially, he just says, arise and eat. He's very caring. He's ministering to him. And he tells him to go to Horeb. So he goes to Horeb. Goes into a cave there, and notice the question, what are you doing here, Elijah? And Elijah says, I've been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with a sword. I alone am left. They seek to take my life. And anyway, so God asks him questions. A little later, he comes back and says the same thing. God, what are you doing here, Elijah? By the way, I do want to insert here, obviously we don't know what all God said. People who are depressed typically will feel like nobody can understand. That's why it's good to ask questions. Help them talk about it. Sometimes they don't want to talk about it, but they actually, if they don't want to talk about it, what they'll assume is that it won't do any good or you won't really understand. And so that desire to be understood is still there, and it's actually typically more powerful in them. God didn't address distortions immediately. You mentioned irrationality, that people who are depressed are irrational. They think things, nobody cares, God doesn't care. Elijah says, and I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. God didn't say, no, Elijah, that's not true. Okay, he just let it pass. There was more work that needed to be done in Elijah before those things were addressed. And so he doesn't address the distortion immediately. I'm sorry, I had to throw this one in. God gave him medication. He went in the strength of that for 40 days. I don't know what else to call it, folks. But he gave him some miracle food. Okay, let's just say it that way. And if you think I'm distorting scripture, just cross that one off. That's all right. God asked Elijah to do what he could do. He gave him a number of things to do. He said, go to this particular cave. Later, and this was after there had been some recovery, he sent him to do a number of things, anoint a king and anoint a successor, anoint Elisha. But he asked Elijah, and I just want to say this, sometimes we want to help somebody, we so want to help them that we don't do anything, or we do everything for them, try to do everything for them. Let them do what they can do. Keep it within what they can, but that honors them. God used gentle methods. And you see the again, we make a lot of applications here, earthquake and the fire, the wind and the fire, and then the gentle voice. I want to say this, folks, about depressed people. Depressed people can be incredibly stubborn, okay? And you just want to, you want to shake them sometimes, and you want to get up and, you know, really use some force here. Notice the gentle voice. If you feel like an earthquake or like using an earthquake, remember God's tactics, okay? He showed it, but then he spoke to him in a gentle voice. And just so encouraging here. God gave Elijah a, I call it a God experience. Or he stands here on the mountain, and we can't force these kinds of things. But I am encouraging you to think about bringing people into the presence of God. People who are depressed, let them hear you pray for them. You might want to read a scripture. Ask them if they have a favorite scripture, but give them God moments. Bring them into the presence of God. And sometimes the best way you can do that is simply to love them. They are not able to experience God, but they may be able to experience your love. That's a God moment. That's a God experience. You ministering the presence of God to them. God gave Elijah a helper. And so he cares about what Elijah's needs are. He brings Elisha onto the scene, gives him something to do, and just, again, honors him and his needs. And then God spoke words of truth. It almost comes as an afterthought. He says to Elijah, I want you to do this and do this and so on. And by the way, there are 7,000, okay? He does come to correcting that. He does come to showing him truth, but it's when Elijah has been prepared for it. And truth, I want to say, truth to a depressed person, a drowning person, is sometimes very, very difficult to believe. You give it to them too quick, too fast, and they choke on it. But there's a time when it's life-giving, and we should not neglect it.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.